Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Here's Tony's conversation piece on WICC 600.
All right, with us here on the telephone line is Bill Bloss, and Bill is with Koskoff, and Beter. And Bill, it's an honor to have you here this morning. How you doing, my friend?
Happy to be here. Good, Tony.
All right. You know. First of all, Bill, we want to make it clear that you are not connected to the Doulos case whatsoever, but you are our legal expert, and we just wanted to know a couple of things, a couple of questions that maybe you can answer. For example, we want to know, why did it take police so long to slap murder charges on Fotis Doulos?
Well, I think the simple answer is that they were just trying to be careful. I think in reading the arrest warrant affidavit, I think it's going to surprise people how much video surveillance, how much cell phone record surveillance that there actually is, and that obviously it took a long time to put together. I don't think anybody who is involved in this business is surprised that it took this long. It's a very unusual a set of circumstances.
You're fine.
Well, it's just a case of making sure the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed, right?
Mm. Well, I think it's even more than that, Tony. It's that they had to look through probably thousands of hours of surveillance videos. There's surveillance videos from New Canaan school buses. You know, the traffic cameras that some of the school buses have that record people driving past stopped school buses. They went through school bus video to find a location of one vehicle that the police say is involved. They've got video surveillance from rest areas on the Merritt Parkway where, again, vehicles are passing by. There's cell phone records that obviously took them some time to go through. So, yeah, in a case like this where there's no body, the police have to rely on other investigative techniques. And in this particular situation, those investigative techniques took time. I don't think anybody can fault the amount of time.
And Bill, I'm glad that you brought that up because I was thinking about the body aspect of this. Now, we know police have said that they said they have enough evidence to say that Jennifer Doulos has been murdered and that it was a very gruesome situation. But again, no body found. We do know that her blood was found in multiple places. But what if a body never pops up? I mean, what is the worst that Fotis Doulos could face?
Well, people have been convicted of murder without a body being found. The most famous Connecticut case on that is the Richard Crafts with the wood chipper case back in Newtown. I don't know, it was probably 30 years ago or something. It's unusual, but it's not unprecedented at all. There may never be a body found if she is in fact dead, but that doesn't mean that there's no potential exposure to a murder charge.
And the other two people who are facing charges connected or conspiracy to murder are Michelle Traconis, the ex-girlfriend of Fotis Doulos, and also a very good friend of Fotis Doulos, who is also a local attorney in Connecticut. What is the worst that they will probably see? Because Michelle Traconis, she's been working very closely with police and has been cooperating, and they've now named her a conspirator. And then this close friend who may have helped find a property to put Jennifer temporarily. So what's the worst that they could see, you think?
Well, they're charged with conspiracy to commit murder. I will tell you that I am quite confident that the police or the prosecutor would be interested in Traconis' cooperation. Traconis was interviewed by the police several times. At least the arrest warrant says that the stories were not always consistent, but then she did make some admissions that the police have included in the warrant as being consistent with guilt. The problem that the prosecutor has is that Traconis' statements to the police are not admissible in evidence against Doulos unless she actually testifies. So she made some, at least according to the police arrest warrant affidavit, she's made some statements consistent with being involved, but that's not going to help them against Doulos unless she cooperates, unless she testifies. And that obviously is a major decision. She's going to have to think very hard about what she wants to do. But that is I don't think it would be any particular surprise if those calls had already been made, both to Mawhinney's lawyer and also to Terconis' lawyer.
Bill, if you could, in less than a minute, he's out on bail right now. Now, a potential killer is just walking free, or is he being heavily monitored right now?
Well, he's being monitored. He's not exactly just able to go wherever he wants, whenever he wants. I would think it's highly likely that there are eyes on him, either electronically or visually, from at regular intervals. And the purpose of bond is not to punish. The purpose of bond is to ensure that the person appears for trial, because right now all three of them are presumed innocent and are innocent unless they're found guilty. So he is free on bond, but it is very restricted.
Bill Blass from Koskoff, Koskoff and Peter, thank you for taking a few minutes. You've cleared up a few questions that we've had. And, hopefully we can talk to you again when we need some legal advice.
Well, anytime, Tony.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Bill. Every Tuesday at this time, we always connect with Jenny Curry. She's a professional counselor out of Milford. And Jenny, of course, we welcome you to the show as always. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's our pleasure. Now, whether it's dating or just friendships, it is common for people to end up in toxic relationships or dealing with toxic people. Now, what do you do? Do you cut these people out of your life completely? And if that's the answer, how do you do it?
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I think, like you said, in any area of life, you can kind of stumble upon those types of people, or sometimes go into it maybe unfortunately more willingly because of some of your own past and brokenness. But I think too, part of it is trying to know the difference between, are they toxic or are they just an unhealthy person, right? And so I think that one of the main differences with toxicity, right, is maybe it's these people who you are finished being around and you just feel completely exhausted, and they won't leave you alone. And, you know, they're obsessive, or they're out to kind of get you, in a sense, right? It's the difference between somebody who's just unhealthy. And I think if they are somebody who's toxic, yeah, you have to think about, how do you keep some distance? And because they're toxic, it can be really hard.
Jenny, a question for you, because my mom and I actually, we have this conversation very often, which maybe isn't healthy, but we find that we have one or two friends throughout, I would say, the last 15, 20 years of our lives that I would consider toxic. I feel like as soon as we're done hanging out with them, we feel sort of not depressed, but we feel down. We don't feel motivated. Yeah. We feel things are worse than they were before we saw this person, but we're drawn to them. Why are people drawn to toxic people? I find that I have a bunch of friends. Not a bunch of friends. I'm not popular, but I have a good friends. And these one or two toxic people, I'll cut them out. But then, like, 3 months later, I'll think, I should really just see what they're doing. I should see what's going on. Why are we drawn to toxic people?
Well, Melissa, I think you said it. You said should. I should reach out to them, right? I think so many times why people end up in toxic relationships is because of guilt. And whether it's a friendship or it's a romantic relationship, whatever it is, I think quite often guilt is that factor there. And you feel responsible because their life is terrible and you want to help. And those types of people too can kind of prey on those sympathies.
So how do we drop that feeling bad Catholic guilt kind of thing we got going on? Because that's what's going on.
I know. You know, I was just talking to a client about this last night. And, I think it's one decision at a time, right? I think it's as you start to value yourself more, you recognize that it's important to keep yourself healthy. And so I think as you recognize what that guilt is and where it comes from, and surround yourself too by people who are healthy and strong and encouraging, and just keep saying no to the things that drag you down, the guilt will eventually recede. It just takes some time.
Isn't it a case of how much you will allow that person to get away with too? I mean,
oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the tough thing too, right? Typically toxic people don't like boundaries. And so when you say no, they have a hard time accepting your no and they want to push it. And so that's also a telltale sign that somebody can't really respect your boundaries. And it's also another indication that okay, good idea to step back, and your boundaries have to be that much firmer. And just recognize, like, none of us are God, right? We can't fix them. And that's something that maybe they have to figure out on their own. But if it's not good for us, it's not good for anybody, right?
Yeah, the idea of not fixing people is something I think most people struggle with, because you want so badly to be a good person, you want to accept people, but sometimes there's just either a negativity or there's just something that, you know, it's like watching paint dry. There's really no point. You're almost yelling at the wall, you know, like it's just, that's who they are. I think sometimes when you talk about setting boundaries, Jenny Curry, when you talk about those kinds of things, how do you even go about figuring out what boundaries, you know, do I set boundaries or do I just cut this person out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is if you can ignore them and keep them away, that's kind of a subtle way to set a boundary. If they don't get the hint, then I think, you know, you're cautious in what you share. And if they want to draw you in, you know, you're just like, sorry, I don't have time for that. Or I'm sorry, I have some other things that I have to do. And as much as possible, avoid. But if you have to be very direct and just say, you know, this relationship isn't good for me, then that's what you got to do.
Jenny, we have run out of time, but if people want more information, if they want to talk to you, what can they do?
Sure. They can go to my website at Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y, Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E, counseling.org. And I'd love to hear from them.
All right. Sounds good. Jen Curry, I thank you so very, very much. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.